Hi, this is Mrs. English, and I will be reading to you today from Homer's Iliad. This is the Richmond Lattimore translation of Homer's Iliad, and I am reading from Book 19. Remember the ending for Book 18. We saw Thetis, the mother of Achilles, on her way down from the snows of Olympus, and she is carrying the brand new armor that Hephaestus made for her son Achilles, so that he will have armor now to go out into battle so that he may obtain more glory. Now Dawn, the yellow-robed, arose from the river of Ocean to carry her light to men and to immortals, and Thetis carried to the ships and carried with her the gifts of Hephaestus. She found her beloved son lying in the arms of Patroclus, crying shrill, and his companions in their numbers about him mourned. She, shining among divinities, stood there beside him. She clung to her son's hand and called him by name and spoke to him, "My child, now, though we grieve for him, we must let this man lie dead in the way he first was killed through the gods' designing. Line 10. Accept rather from me the glorious arms of Hephaestus, so splendid and such as no man has ever worn on his shoulders." The goddess spoke so, and set down the armor on the ground before Achilles, and all its elaboration clashed loudly. Trembling took a hold of all the myrmidons. None had the courage to look straight at it. They were afraid of it. Only Achilles looked, and as he looked, the anger came harder upon him, and his eyes glittered terribly under his lids like sun flare. He was glad, holding in his hands the shining gifts of Hephaestus. But when he had satisfied his heart with looking at the intricate armor, he spoke to his mother and addressed her in winged words. "My mother, the god has given me these weapons. They are such as are the work of immortals. No mortal man could have made them. Therefore now I shall arm myself in them. Yet I am sadly afraid during this time, for the warlike son of Menoetius, that flies might get into the wounds beaten by bronze in his body and breed worms in them." And so what is Achilles afraid of? He's only afraid that if he leaves the body of Patroclus and goes off, that flies, of course Patroclus is has many wounds, will get in there and breed worms, and these make foul the body, seeing that the life is killed in him, and that all his flesh may be rotted. In turn, the goddess Thetis, the silver-footed, answered him, "My child, no longer let these things be a care in your mind. I shall endeavor to drive from him the swarming and fierce things." Line 30. "Those flies which feed upon the bodies of men who have perished, and although he lie here till a year has gone to fulfillment, still his body shall be as it was, or a firmer than ever. Go then and summon into assembly the fighting Achaeans, and unsay your anger against Agamemnon." Line 35. "Unsay your anger." So tell them you will not be angry against him, shepherd of the people, and arm at once for the fighting, and put your war strength upon you. She spoke so, and drove the strength of great courage into him. And meanwhile, through the nostrils of Patroclus, she distilled ambrosia and red nectar so that his flesh might not spoil. But he, brilliant Achilles, walked along by the seashore, crying his terrible cry, and stirred up the fighting Achaeans. And even those who before had stayed where the ships were assembled, they who were helmsmen of the ships and handling the steering oar, they who were stewards among the ships and dispensers of rations, even these came then to assembly, since now Achilles had appeared, after staying so long from the sorrowful battle. And there were two who came limping among them, henchmen of Ares both, Tydeus's son, Iomedes, the staunch in battle, and brilliant Odysseus, leaning on spears, since they had the pain of their wounds yet upon them, and came and took their seats in the front rank of those assembled. Line 50. And last of them came in the lord of men Agamemnon, with a wound on him, seeing that Caune, the son of Antenor, had stabbed him with the bronze edge of the spear in the strong encounter. But now, when all the Achaeans were in one body together, Achilles of the swift feet stood up before them and spoke to them. Line 55. "Son of Atreus, was this after all the better way for both, for you and me, that we, for all our heart's sorrow, quarreled together for the sake of a girl in soul-perishing hatred? I wish Artemis had killed her beside the ships with an arrow on that day when I destroyed Lyrnessus and took her. And so here he is unsaying his anger in line 60. And of course, if a woman dies, they usually say Artemis has killed her with an arrow. And he says, I now wish that we had not ever had that girl to fight over, wish she'd been killed the day I took her. For thus not all these, too many Achaeans, would have bitten the dust, my enemy hands, when I was away in my anger. This way was better for the Trojans and Hector. Yet I think the Achaeans will too long remember this quarrel between us. Yes, it's 2007. Line 65. Still, we will let all this be a thing of the past, though it hurts us and beat down by constraint the anger that rises inside us. Now I'm making an end of my anger. It does not become me unrelentingly to rage on. Come then, the more quickly drive on the flowing-haired Achaeans into the fighting, so that I may go up against the Trojans and find out if they still wish to sleep out beside the ships. I think rather they will be glad to rest where they are, whoever among them gets away with his life from the fury of our spears' onset. He spoke, and the strong grieved Achaeans were pleasured to hear him, and how the great-hearted son of Peleus unsaid his anger. Now among them spoke forth the lord of men, Agamemnon, from the place where he was sitting, and did not stand up among them. Fighting men and friends, O Danaans, henchmen of Ares, it is well to listen to the speaker. It is not becoming to break in on him. This will be hard for him, though he be able. How among the great murmur of people shall anyone listen or speak either? A man, though he speak very clearly, is baffled. I shall address the son of Peleus. Yet all you other Argives listen also, and give my word careful attention. Line 85. This is the word the Achaeans have spoken often against me, and found fault with me in it. Yet I am not responsible, but Zeus is, and Destiny, and Eurynes, the mist-walking. These are the Furies. This is kind of like listening to someone say, the devil made me do it. Zeus did this, and Destiny, who in assembly caught my heart in a savage delusion on that day I myself stripped from him the prize of Achilles. It was not my fault I took Achilles' prize. Line 90. Yet what could I do? It is the god who accomplishes all things. Delusion is the elder daughter of Zeus, the accursed who deludes all. Her feet are delicate, and they step not on the firm earth, but she walks the air above men's heads, and leads them astray. She has entangled others before me. Yes, for once Zeus even was deluded, though men say he is the highest one of the gods and mortals. Yet Hera, who is female, deluded even Zeus in her craftiness. On that day, when in strong wall-circled Thebe, Alcmene was at her time to bring forth the strength of Heracles. Therefore Zeus spoke forth and made a vow before all the immortals. Hear me, all you gods and all you goddesses, hear me while I speak forth what the heart within my breast urges. This day Eileithyia of women's child pains shall bring forth a man to the light who, among the men sprung of the generation of my blood, shall be lord over all those dwelling about him. Line 105. Then, in guileful intention, the lady Hera said to him, you will be a liar, not put fulfillment on what you have spoken. Come then, lord of Olympus, and swear before me a strong oath, that he shall be lord over all those dwelling about him, who this day shall fall between the feet of a woman. And, of course, falling between the feet of a woman is a metaphor for giving birth, or being born. Line 110. That man who is born of the blood of your generation. So Hera spoke, and Zeus was entirely unaware of her falsehood, but swore a great oath, and therein lay all his deception. But Hera, in a flash of speed, left the horn of Olympus, and rapidly came to Argos of Achaea, Greece, where she knew was the mighty wife of Sthenelus, descended of Perseus. And she was carrying a son, and this was the seventh month for her, but she brought him sooner into the light, and made him premature, and stayed the birth of Alcmene, and held back the birth pains. She went herself and spoke the message to Zeus, son of Cronos, Father Zeus of the shining bolt, I will tell you a message for your heart. A great man is born who will be lord over the Argives, Eurystheus, son of Sthenelus of the seed of Perseus, your generation. It is not unfit that he should rule over the Argives. She spoke, and the sharp sorrow struck at his deep heart. Of course, because what happened here is that Hera caused the baby not to be born. Heracles is not born yet, and so now he can't be the greatest. He caught by the shining hair of her head the goddess Delusion in the anger of his heart, and swore a strong oath that never after this might Delusion, who deludes all, come back to Olympus and the starry sky. So speaking, he whirled her about in his hand and slung her out of the starry heaven, and presently she came to men's establishments. But Zeus would forever grieve over her each time he saw his dear son doing some shameful work of the tasks that Eurystheus set him, his son Heracles, whom he meant to rule, and Heracles is the one who has to accomplish these 12 labors. And so Zeus grieves over this delusion every time he sees Heracles accomplishing one of these 12 labors. Back to the text. 1-4. So I, in my time, when tall Hector of the shining helm was forever destroying the Argives against the sterns of the vessels, could not forget delusion, the way I was first deluded. But since I was deluded, and Zeus took away my wits from me, I'm willing to make all good and give back gifts in abundance. Rise up, then, to the fighting and rouse the rest of the people. Here am I, to give you all those gifts, as many as brilliant Odysseus yesterday went to your shelter and promised. These are the gifts from Book 9. Or, if you will, hold back, though you lean hard into the battle, while my followers take the gifts from my ship and bring them to you, so you may see what I give to comfort your spirit. Then in answer to him spoke Achilles of the swift feet. Son of Atreus, most lordly and king of men, Agamemnon, the gifts are yours to give, if you wish, as it is proper, or to keep with yourself. But now let us remember our joy in warcraft immediately, for it is not fitting to stay here and waste time nor delay, since there is still a big work to be done. So can a man see once more Achilles among the front fighters with the bronze spear wrecking the Trojan battalions? Therefore let each of you remember this and fight his antagonist. Then in answer to him spoke resourceful Odysseus. Not that way, good fighter, that you are, godlike Achilles. Do not drive the sons of the Achaeans on Ilion when they are hungry to fight against the Trojans, since not short will be the time of battle once the massed formations of men have encountered together with the god-inspiring fury on both sides. And so Odysseus is going to tell Achilles, we've already fought all day, and, of course, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Rather, line 160, tell the men of Achaea here by their swift ships to take food and wine, since these make fighting fury and warcraft, for man will not have strength to fight his way forward all day long until the sun goes down if he's starved for food. Even though in his heart he be very passionate for the battle, yet without his knowing it his limbs will go heavy, and hunger and thirst will catch up with him and cumber his knees as he moves on. But when a man has been well filled with wine and with eating, and then does battle all day long against the enemy, why then the heart inside him is full of cheer, nor do his limbs get weary until all are ready to give over the fighting. Line 170. I will back up a bit, because this is in your study guide, up to line 142. This is Agamemnon speaking to Achilles, and look at the way he addresses Achilles. If you hold back, so you may see, I will give comfort to your spirit. And how does Achilles reply in return to Agamemnon? Line 145. Achilles does not say, you, the gifts are yours to give if you want, go ahead. He addresses him with a proper address to the greatest king, the shepherd of the people, who is among them, son of Atreus, most lordly and king of men, Agamemnon. And so we see that Agamemnon to Achilles still is not showing the respect due to the greatest Greek warrior, and Achilles to Agamemnon is showing respect. Very interesting. And we don't want anybody to get hungry and not fight well because they have no breakfast. Line 171. Come then, tell your men to scatter, and bid them get ready a meal. And as for the gifts, let the lord of men Agamemnon bring them to the middle of our assembly, so all the Achaeans can see them before their eyes, so your own heart may be pleasured. And let him stand up before the Argives, the Greeks, and swear an oath to you that he never entered her bed and never lay with her, as is natural for people, my lord, between men and women. And of course this is Briseis. They're trying to make sure that Agamemnon just kept her hidden in a closet somewhere. And by this let the spirit of your own heart be made gracious. After that, in his own shelter, let him appease you with a generous meal, so you will lack nothing of what is due you. And you, son of Atreus, after this, be more righteous to another man, for there is no fault when even one who is a king appeases a man, when the king was the first one to be angry. Then in turn the lord of men, Agamemnon, answered him, hearing what you have said, son of Laertes, and of course this would be Odysseus, I am pleased with you. Fairly have you gone through everything and explained it, And all this I am willing to swear to, and my heart urges me, and I will not be forsworn before the gods. Let Achilles stay here the while, though he lean very hard toward the work of the war god, and remain the rest of you all here assembled, until the gifts come back from my shelter, and while we cut our oaths of fidelity. And for you yourself, Odysseus, I give you this errand, this order, that you choose out excellent young men of all the Achaeans, and bring the gifts back here from my ship, all that you promised yesterday to Achilles, and bring the women back also. And in the wide host of the Achaeans, let Telebius make ready a boar for me, and dedicate it to Zeus and Helios, and of course the sun god. Then in answer to him spoke Achilles of the swift feet, son of Atreus, most lordly and king of men, Agamemnon, at some other time rather you should busy yourself about these things, line 200, when there is some stopping point in the fighting, at some time when there is not so much fury inside of my heart. But now, as things are, they lie there torn, whom the son of Priam, Hector, has beaten down, since Zeus was giving him glory. And then you urge a man to eating. No, but I would now drive forward the sons of the Achaeans into the fighting, starving and unfed, and afterwards, when the sun sets, make ready a great dinner, when we have paid off our defilement. But before this, for me at least, neither food nor drink shall go down my very throat, since my companion has perished and lies inside my shelter, torn about with the cutting bronze, and turned against the forecoat, while my companions mourn about him. And this is fascinating, line 212, that Patroclus is in his shelter, and he is turned against the forecourt. This means that his feet are pointing toward the door. This is supposed to prevent his ghost from returning. Food and drink mean nothing to my heart, but blood does, and slaughter, and the groaning of men in the hard work. So Achilles is very anxious to get to the slaughter. Line 215. Then in answer to him spoke resourceful Odysseus, son of Peleus, Achilles, far greatest of the Achaeans. You notice that Odysseus is addressing Achilles properly? Far greatest of the Achaeans, you are stronger than I am, and greater by not a little with the spear. Yet I in turn might overpass you in wisdom by far, since I was born before you, and have learned more things. So Odysseus says, oh, well, I am older than you. Therefore let your heart endure to listen to my words. When there is battle, men have suddenly their fill of it. When the bronze scatters on the ground, the straw, and this is metaphorically just bodies, in most numbers, and the harvest is most thin, when Zeus has poised his balance, Zeus, who is administrator to men in their fighting. This is Zeus's balance again. We've had at least a couple references of this here in line 223. This balance is like a scales that he holds, and your life hangs in the balance, and if your side goes down, then you are destined to die. He does not produce or make this destiny, but he holds the balance. He holds this balance scale. Line 225. There is no way the Achaeans can mourn a dead man by denying the belly. Too many fall day by day, one upon another, and how could anyone find breathing space from his labor? No, but we must harden our hearts and bury the man who dies, when we have wept over him on the day, and all those who are left about from the hateful work of war must remember food and drink, so that afterwards all the more strongly we may fight on forever relentless against our enemies, with the weariless bronze put on about our bodies. Let not one wait longing for any other summons to stir on the people. Line 235. This summons now shall be an evil on anyone left behind by the ships of the Argives. Therefore let us drive on together and wake the bitter war god on the Trojans, breaker of horses. He spoke, and went away with the sons of glorious Nestor, with Meges, the son of Phileus, and Meriones, and Thoas, and Lycomedes, the son of Creon, and Melanippus. These went on their way to the shelter of Atreus's son, Agamemnon. No sooner was the order given than the thing had been done. They brought back 7 tripods from the shelter, those Agamemnon had promised, and 20 shining cauldrons, 12 horses. They brought back immediately the 7 women, the work of whose hands was blameless, and the 8th of them was Briseis of the fair cheeks. Odysseus weighed out 10 full talents of gold and led them back, and the young men of the Achaeans carried the other gifts. They brought these into the midst of assembly, and Agamemnon stood up, and Telebius, in voice like an immortal, stood up beside the shepherd of the people with the boar in his hands. Atreus's son, laid hands upon his work knife and drew it from where it hung ever beside the great sheath of his war sword, and cut first hairs away from the boar, and lifting his hands up to Zeus, prayed, while all the Argives, the Greeks, stayed fast at their places, line 255, in silence and in order of station, and listened to their king. So they sit in order of station. The most important is going to be closer to Agamemnon, and the least important will be furthest away. He spoke before them in prayer, gazing into the wide sky. Let Zeus first be my witness, highest of the gods and greatest, and earth, and Helios the sun, because Helios can see everything, so they call on him, and Furies, who underground avenge dead men when any man has sworn to a falsehood, that I have never laid a hand on the girl Briseis on pretext to go to bed with her or for any other reason, but she remained not singled out in my shelter. If any of this is falsely sworn, may the gods give me many griefs, all that they inflict on those who swear falsely before them. Line 265. So he spoke, and with pitiless bronze he cut the boar's throat. Tilibius whirled the body about and threw it on the great reach of the grey sea to feed the fishes. Meanwhile Achilles stood up among the battle-fond Achaeans and spoke to them. Father Zeus, great are the delusions with which you visit men. Line 270. Without you, the son of Atreus could never have stirred so the heart inside my breast, nor taken the girl away from me, against my will and be in helplessness. No, but Zeus somehow wished that death should befall great numbers of the Achaeans, the Greeks. Go now and take your dinner, so we may draw on the battle. So he spoke, and suddenly broke up the assembly. Now these scattered away, each man to his own ship. Meanwhile, the great-hearted Myrmidons disposed of the presents. They went on their way carrying them to the ship of godlike Achilles, and stowed the gifts in the shelters, and let the women be settled, while proud henchmen drove the horses into Achilles' horse herd. And now, in the likeness of golden Aphrodite, Briseis, when she saw Patroclus lying torn with sharp bronze, folding him in her arms, cried shrilly above him, and with her hands tore at her breasts and her soft throat and her beautiful forehead. The woman, like the immortals mourning for him, spoke to him, Patroclus, far most pleasing to my heart in its sorrows, I left you here alive when I went away from the shelter, but now I come back, lord of the people, to find you have fallen. So evil in my life takes over from evil forever. The husband on whom my father and honored mother bestowed me, I saw before my city lying torn with the sharp bronze, and my three brothers, whom a single mother bore with me and who were close to me, all went on one day to destruction. And yet you would not let me, when swift Achilles had cut down my husband and sacked the city of godlike Mines, you would not let me sorrow, but said you would make me godlike Achilles' wedded lawful life, that you would take me back in the ships to Pythia and formalize my marriage among the Myrmidons. Therefore I weep your death without ceasing. You were always kind. So she spoke, line 301, lamenting, and the women sorrowed around her, grieving openly for Patroclus, but for her own sorrows each. But the lords of Achaea were gathered about Achilles, beseeching him to eat, but he with a groan denied them. I beg of you, line 305, if any dear companion will listen to me, stop urging me to satisfy the heart in me with food and drink, since this strong sorrow has come upon me. I will hold out till the sun goes down and endure, though it be hard. So he spoke, and caused the rest of the kings to scatter. But the two sons of Atreus stayed with him, and brilliant Odysseus, and Nestor, and Idomeneus, and the aged charioteer, Phoenix, comforting him close in his sorrow, yet his heart would not be comforted, till he went into the jaws of the bleeding battle. Remembering Patroclus, he sighed much for him, and spoke aloud. Line 315. There was a time, ill-fated, O dearest of all my companions, when you yourself would set the desirable dinner before me quickly and expertly, at the time the Achaeans were urgent to carry sorrowful war on the Trojans, breakers of horses. But now you lie here torn from me, and my heart goes starved for meat and drink, though they are here beside me, by reason of longing for you. There is nothing worse than this I could suffer, not even if I were to hear of the death of my father, who now, I think, in Pythia, somewhere lets fall a soft tear for bereavement of such a son, for me, who now in a strange land make war upon the Trojans for the sake of a cursed Helen, line 325, or the death of my dear son, who is raised for my sake in Scyrus. Now, if godlike Neoptolemus is still one of the living, Here we learn that Achilles has a son, and his son's name is Neoptolemus. Before now, the spirit inside my breast was hopeful that I alone should die far away from horse-pasturing Argus here in Troy. I hoped you would win back again to Pythia, so that a fast black ship you could take my son back from Scyrus to Pythia and show him all my possessions. So Achilles wanted Patroclus to at least live, even though he knew he would die, so he could go to Scyrus and take him back to Pythia, take Neoptolemus there, and show him all the possessions, all his teammate. My property, my serving men, my great high-roofed house. For by this time I think that Peleus must altogether have perished, or still keeps a little scant life in sorrow for the hatefulness of old age, and because he waits ever from me the evil message for the day he hears I've been killed. So he spoke, mourning, and the elders lamented around him, remembering each those he had left behind in his own halls, because they've been here almost 10 years. The son of Cronos took pity on them as he watched them mourning, and immediately spoke in winged words to Athena. My child, have you utterly abandoned the man of your choice? Is there no longer deep concern in your heart for Achilles? Now he has sat down before the steep-horned ships and is mourning for his own beloved companion, while all the others have gone to take their dinner, but he is fasting and unfed. Go then to him and distill nectar inside his chest, and delicate ambrosia, so the weakness of hunger will not come upon him. Speaking so, he stirred Athena, who was eager before this, and she, in the likeness of a wide-winged, thin-crying hawk, plummeted from the sky through the bright air. Now the Achaeans, the Greeks, were arming at once along the encampment. She dropped the delicate ambrosia and the nectar inside the breast of Achilles, softly, so no sad weakness of hunger would come on his knees, and she herself went back to the close house of her powerful father, while they were scattering out away from the fast ships. So what happened? We just read 3, 5, 6. Because Achilles will not eat, she fed him. She just dropped it into his breast. As when, what's it like when they're scattering out away from their ships? As when in their thickness the snowflakes of Zeus come fluttering cold beneath the blast of the north wind born in the bright sky, so now in their thickness the pride of the helms bright shining were carried out from the ships, and shields massive in the middle, and the corslets strongly hallowed, and the ash spears were worn forth. The shining swept to the sky, and all earth was laughing about them, under the glitter of bronze, and beneath their feet stirred the thunder of men, whose midst brilliant Achilles helmed him. Achilles put on his helmet. Line 365. A clash went from the grinding of his teeth, and his eyes glowed as if they were the stare of a fire, and the heart inside him was entered with sorrow beyond endurance. Raging at the Trojans, he put on the gifts of the god that Hephaestus wrought him with much toil. First, he placed along his legs the fair greaves linked with silver fastenings to hold the greaves at the ankles. Afterward, he girt on about his chest the corselet, and across his shoulders slung the sword with the nails of silver, a bronze sword, and caught up the great shield, heavy, huge and heavy. Next, and from it, the light glimmered far as from the moon. And, line 375, as when from across water a light shines to mariners from a blazing fire, when the fire is burning high in the mountains in a desolate steading, as the mariners are carried unwilling by storm winds over the fish-swarming sea, far away from their loved ones, so the light from the fair elaborate shield of Achilles shot into the high air, line 380, and lifting the helmet, he set it massive upon his head, and the helmet crested with horsehair shone like a star. The golden fringes were shaken about it, which Hephaestus had driven close along the horn of the helmet. And brilliant Achilles tried himself in his armor to see if it fitted close and how his glorious limbs ran within it, and the armor became as wings and upheld the shepherd of the people. Next he pulled out from its standing place the spear of his father, huge, heavy, thick, which no one else of all the Achaeans, the Greeks, could handle, but Achilles alone knew how to wield it, the Pelian ash spear, which Chiron had brought to his father from high on Pelion, to be death for fighters in battle. Be sure and read the notes in your study guide on Chiron, a very different type of a half-man, half-horse. Automedon and Alcimus, in charge of the horses, yoked them, and put the fair breast straps about them, and forced the bits home between their jaws, and pulled the reins back against the compacted chariot seat, and one, Automedon, took up the shining whip caught close in his hand, and vaulted up to the chariot, while behind him Achilles, helmed for battle, took his stance, shining in all his armor like the sun when he crosses above us, and cried in a terrible voice on the horses of his father, Xanthus, Balius, Bay, and Dapple, famed sons of Podarge, we have the pedigree of the horses, take care to bring in another way your charioteer back to the company of the Danans when we give over fighting, and not leave him to lie fallen there as you did to Patroclus. And so here Achilles gives the immortal horses instructions not to leave his body out there like they left Patroclus's body out there. Line 404. Then from beneath the yoke the gleamed-footed horse answered him. And so apparently here in line 405 the horse is speaking. Xanthus, and as he spoke, bowed his head, so that all the mane fell away from the pad and swept the ground by the cross-yoke. The goddess of the white arms, Hera, had put a voice in him. We shall still keep you safe for this time, O hard Achilles, and yet the day of your death is near, but it is not we who are to blame, but a great god and powerful destiny. For it was not because we were slow, because we were careless, that the Trojans have taken the armor from the shoulders of Patroclus, nay, since this is a horse, but it was that high god, the child of lovely-haired Leto, who is that? Apollo, who killed him among the champions and gave the glory to Hector. But for us, we too could run with the blast of the west wind, who they say is the lightest of all things, yet still for you there is destiny to be killed in force by a god and a mortal. When he had spoken so, the Furies stopped the voice in him. This is in Xanthus the horse. But deeply disturbed, Achilles of the swift feet answered him, Xanthus, why do you prophesy my death? Line 420. This is not for you. I myself know well it is destined for me to die here, far from my beloved father and mother. But for all that, I will not stop till the Trojans have had enough of my fighting. He spoke, and shouting, held on in the foremost his single-foot horses. And there ends book 19.